that's what it is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Okay, hello everyone, and welcome to the NBL Pocket Podcast. This is the Round 14 review, Round 15 preview. Recording this Tuesday, 7th of January. First things first, if you're listening to the show for the first time, be sure to subscribe. That way, when a new episode comes out, it automatically downloads onto your phone and you can listen. And then also, if you're there on the Apple's iTunes Store or Spotify or whatever streaming service you use, like the show and review the show as well. If you review the show, I'll probably read it and I'll mention you on the next episode. Let's jump straight into things. NBL news, let's start there. Keith Benson has finally been cut by the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. I mean, that was talked about after the Blitz, which was, 14 rounds ago. But he's finally gone. He's gone to a team in Dubai. So the question now becomes, who or will they replace him with? The obvious thought I had was Jay Crockett. He's been on the team. We're around 15. You know, there's 2 or 3 months left in the season. Do you think you can bring in a new player who's of the caliber and integrate them into your team this late in the piece? Debatable. So maybe Jay Crockett's that guy. I personally think they should probably sign no one, and I'll talk about why I think that is later on when we talk about their game against New Zealand. But let's jump off with the first game of the round. Cairns hosted the Brisbane Bullets, and they won this one by 2. Scoreline very flattering to the Bullets. They were down by a lot more and pushed back, to their credit, but I did feel like Cairns really took their foot off the gas. First and foremost, with the Taipans, offensive reboundings in the first quarter again, conceding a big margin, and it is a bit of a condemnation of Mike Kelly. Happened in this game and their game last round, I forget who, I think Southeast Melbourne. They won both of those games, but it's a bad look when you, energy-wise, when you come out to a game and concede a great number of offensive rebounds. I mean, they were down 1 offensive rebound to 8 at the end of the first quarter to Brisbane, who are not historically a great offensive rebounding team, so it comes down to effort. One thing I noticed about Brisbane, although they got close, was the lack of switchability of the Bullets. Singler, Braun, Patterson, people have spoken about it before, off screens and things, they were very easily under or overmatched against defenders coming off those. One thing it highlighted me in this game, and it was really yin and yang, the importance of athleticism when attacking the hoop in the NBL. You look at the foul breakdown of who got fouled in this game. Cam Oliver drew 4, Majuk Deng drew 4 fouls, and DJ Newball drew 2. On the other side of things, Patterson had 5 fouls. He's not athletic at the hoop, but he has a different crafty way of drawing fouls. And then Nathan Sobey drew 6 fouls. Braun, Singler, Vekona, and Turangi all, I think, had 1 between them. When you attack the basket with athleticism and look to dunk it or finish high, you tend to get the call from refs in this league. And even if you don't get the call, you just tend to finish better. It's a really sort of underrated thing in the NBL. I think the NBA, the big stock is in tall size playmakers, whereas the NBL, I think the undervalued stock is guys who are athletic at the hoop and finish hard. I mean, that's basketball. If you can do that, you're pretty good. But nonetheless, that was that one. Let's jump on to the next game of the round. Illawarra hosted Melbourne. Melbourne winning this 191-104. Again, scoreline pretty flattering. Illawarra hung around, and then when Melbourne got serious, they put the foot down and gassed them. My question to everyone out there is, why is Emmett Nahr not starting these games? I think he's done enough over the last couple of weeks to show that he's the obvious replacement for LaMelo Ball while he's injured. You're looking at their lineup, it's what? Hobson? Deck? Blanchfield? Boone, while AJ Ogilvy has been out. And then who's the other guys in their starting lineup? Hobson? Deck? Blanchfield? Boone? Who am I forgetting? Oh, bother. Conrad? Does he start sometimes? Anyway, you would have thought the obvious choice to start there would be Emmett Nahr in some capacity, but they don't seem to want to do that. And for me, it begs the question, are they purposely leaving him out of the starting lineup so that it makes more sense when LaMelo Ball comes off injury and comes back into the team? It feels off. It doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't make any sense to me anyway. Maybe it does to you out there. The Melbourne shot chart was a lot better in this game. Much better looking shot chart. So I put it together. first column is the shot percentage, or the percentage of the field goal attempts that a player had against Cairns versus this game in Illawarra. So against Cairns, Sean Long had 20% of the field goal attempts. He had 18 against Illawarra. Trimble had 19% against Cairns, 21 against Illawarra. Still a bit high for him. Chris Golding, this is the big difference. 13% against Cairns, 21% against Illawarra. Stanton Kidd, 9% against Cairns, 19% against Illawarra. Mitch McCarron, 7%, only 7% against Cairns, 12% against Illawarra. Still not where you'd like him to be. You want to see him in the high teens, but an improvement nonetheless. And then this was the biggest one that I thought. The bench, they took 20% of the field goal attempts against Cairns. I think Illy had 12 and Smith Milner went 0-4. They were 20% against Cairns. They shot 6% of the field goal attempts against Illawarra, and that's just where they should be, between 5 and 10%. I don't think there's anyone off that bench other than Kidd, who I consider a starter, warrants that many shots. I've heard rumours about there being a split between the imports and the locals on this team. I actually think that's kind of the rule of the rule of NBL basketball. I think the imports are quite close and the locals are quite close. Not always, and not entrenched, but certainly that's the case. I didn't feel, looking at it from television, I haven't seen them in person in a couple of rounds. They lost those previous games not because they were discontent or upset. They lost it because the bench was a little too trigger happy. We'll see if more comes out about that Melbourne locker room. Next game, Sydney versus Adelaide. Haven't got a lot to say about this. Sydney's defense was incredible, holding the Adelaide 36ers to 77 points, scoring 91. As I said, brilliant. They held them to 77. Adelaide's average is 97 points per game, or 96.7. So they held them 20 points under their average. That's called dominating tempo. However, the Kings still down on their 93.4% scoring average. So only two baskets, but they are down. The scoring has been an issue with this Kings team. And here we go. 9 of 33, 27% from the outside for the Kings. That's low for a team that shoots so many. You would say in the true shooting percentage or the effective field goal percentage, that's actually higher because threes are worth more than twos. I get that, but still that's not a great percentage to shoot from the outside. More than the threes, because I can put that aside, because the more you shoot, the more you miss, but the more you make and the more threes are worth twos. But however, free throws, 12 of 21, 57%. That's a problem that's not going away. And the big problem is Tate, who takes the majority of their free throws and shoots it around that high 50s, low 60s. And then you've got Andrew Bogut, who's shooting them better, but still splits them at about 60-40. I haven't got their season average of where they are on free throws, but it's not high. Casper Ware's shooting again, 25% from the field, 4 of 16. Is it fatigue? Is it shot selection? Looks to me a bit of both. But definitely something to keep an eye on with those Sydney Kings. Next game of the round, Southeast Melbourne hosted the New Zealand Breakers, winning it. Breakers, it's getting, are we calling this an upset? 92-97, probably. It's time to have a tough conversation about Ty Wesley. And I just wanted to mention someone now. Rod Siegel is a guy who I saw on Facebook and had mentioned this. I was already thinking about Ty Wesley and his return to this lineup from an article that Brad Winter wrote for the Pick and Roll. He's a fine writer. Go and check him out on Twitter. I believe he's at Brad Winter. But Rod also hit upon the same point. I did read what he said and expanded upon it here. But let's look at this. So Ty Wesley returned in round 12, Sunday the 8th of December for the Phoenix, having played half or 10 minutes of that first game and then sat the rest out. He returned on that game Sunday 8th of December in a loss against Perth. Southeast Melbourne's record is 6-6 at the point that he was out. I'm going to include the first game of the round that he played in but missed, but got injured in as a game he wasn't there. So they were 6-6. Since then, they've gone 2-5 since his return. Now, it's not fair to do that. They've had a much more difficult stretch, playing more teams over 500. I think they've played Sydney maybe once or twice, Cairns once or twice. So it's not really fair. But nonetheless, 2-5 since his return. And it's the lineups. And interestingly, there are two lineups that have played a minimum of 100 possessions for the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, and they jump out to me. The number one lineup that jumps out to me is the Adam Gibson, Ben Magin, John Robison, Mitch Creek, Dane Pinot lineup. That has an adjusted plus minus of 43. That's the second best adjusted plus minus behind Melbourne, and a net rating of 30, which is first. Now, if you don't know, plus minus is how well that team does on the court, how many points they score, to how many points they give up. And the net rating is essentially, it's just that, an offensive-defensive rating, how good this team is when you put both together. So that's technically, on paper, the best team or best lineup in the NBL. It hasn't played a lot of late, and since Wesley's return, he kind of does throw a spanner in the works there. Conversely, a Southeast Melbourne lineup of Ben Magin, John Robison, Mitch Creek, Dane Pinot, and Ty Wesley has an adjusted net rating of negative 16, and that's the second worst of all 100 possession lineups, and a net rating of negative 3, which for lineups that have played a minimum of 100 possessions is the third worst in the NBL. So you see where a lineup that they had before did well and a lineup with Ty Wesley does poorly. Now, if I can just firstly say, these statistics are courtesy of spatialjam.com. Go there, and most importantly, go there and donate to keep the site running. But most importantly, with this lineup, is Ty Wesley. Where do we sit? And it's not to say that Ty Wesley is a bad player. I really like gin as an alcohol, but if I put it in a bourbon and Coke, it's not going to taste good. You know, but that doesn't mean the gin is bad. It's not the gin's fault. Gin's fantastic. Juniper berry growers out there, love your work, but I don't put it in a rum and Coke or a bourbon and Coke. And that's kind of the decision that Simon Mitchell's got to make. And in their press conference, Simon Mitchell was sitting next to Dane Pinot, and Dane Pinot was saying how friendly this team is, how friendly and buddy-buddy this team is, which sort of didn't mirror, but was the total opposite of what Joey Wright was saying in his press conference a week before, that they're too buddy-buddy. So Simon Mitchell's now going to make a really tough choice about whether they go with that experiment with that lineup that won them games early in the year, admittingly against presumably weaker opponents. Does he go with that lineup, or does he go with Ty Wesley, who's their import and they've signed for the next 3 years and is coming back from injury? Really tough spot. But the difference is, Creek, when you put him at the four, he becomes the best four in basketball with Nick Kay. You know, when they play Cairns, if he plays four, his direct opponent is Majuk Den, unless they make changes. So that's the position their MVP needs to be in to be at his best. Are they willing to have that difficult conversation with themselves and their locker room to make that happen? That's for Simon Mitchell. Let's just also note, if we drop the minimum possessions to 50, so half of the 100 that we did before, the best lineup in the NBL is New Zealand's. Brandon Ashley, Finn Delaney, Sec Henry, Scotty Hobson, Tom Abercrombie. A combined net rating of plus 39. Just a little side note, when that group plays, boy, they're good. The problem is Ashley and his foul discipline. Finn Delaney is he's playing great. He's hitting shots. He's attacking the basket. Who would have thought a 24-year-old would improve from last year? And then the other guys are playing well as well. Tom Abercrombie's just having a much better feel with this lineup and playing off Hobson. I think he was burdening too much of the dribble creation when Webster was there. And now that Hobson's there, he's playing his natural game. Mitch Creek had a bit of a bad turnover late in this game. Got a defensive rebound and just sort of straight away put it on the deck and got it tapped away. In isolation, it's not such a bad play, but when you pair it with, I think he's had two instances late in games, in close games, where he's kind of had awkward decision making, that makes it tough for Creek. So, and I spoke to people about this and I said, what do you think it is? And a lot of people told me he's between two mindsets of to be selfish or unselfish, or not selfish, but to be aggressive or passive, and what to do in that instance. And he's caught between two minds and he's coming into it. And you can see that on Creek. But, you know, that's not to say he's bad in fourth quarters or bad in last minute. That's not the case at all, but he was in this particular instance. Next game of the round, Brisbane Bullets hosted the Perth Wildcats. This is an interesting game. Brisbane really kind of commandingly winning this game, 97-85. I didn't think the Wildcats were in it. Damian Martin has been out, and that has really shown itself on the Wildcats. Tarico White looked ill. And it showed in his shooting performance. He went 2 of 9. He was just getting beaten by Patterson. He just really couldn't even stay in front of him, couldn't maintain contact. I think he was ill. There was a scene where he was on the bench and got handed toilet paper, so I would have thought if he was ill, you'd probably give him a tissue, but maybe that's what that's for. Maybe it was for something else. He just didn't look himself, and I don't think he looked disinterested or didn't care. That has been the knock on him, that that's his style. But no, I thought he was carrying something. And it wouldn't at all surprise me if the Perth Wildcats didn't divulge their injury issues before, after, during the game. They're not a terribly communicative club. Wildcats. They're second in the league right now. Not by a lot, not by a little. Mitch Norton, Damien Martin and Dario Hunt. A championship winning season is on those three. What combination they play and who with. Again, let's have a look at their lineups, because it's getting to that time of year where it's like teams should know who their number one lineup is, who their closing lineup is, and who's their sort of switchy, change-it-up lineup. The lineup of Bryce Cotton, Dario Hunt, Damien Martin, Nick Kay, and Tarico White has a net rating of 8.7 and has played 350 possessions. It's one of the most played lineups for the Wildcats and indeed in the league. A lineup of Cotton, Martin, Majuk, Kay, and White, so their starting lineup, has a net rating of -10.4 in 116 possessions, so decent sample size. The lineup that they're currently closing games with, which is Bryce Cotton, Damien Martin or Norton, for this instance, I've done the stats on Martin because that's the one they're going to go with, presumably. Jesse Wagstaff, Nick Kay, Tarico White, they have a net rating of +41.7, but only over 22 possessions. That's not a lot. That's maybe three quarters of basketball, maybe less. But that's the one they've been playing of late, and it seems to have got them results. Certainly didn't get them results in this game. What do you do here? I don't know what the Wildcats do, and it's really Dario Hunt. Should he be starting? Should he be not? I've been critical of him in the past. He has a propensity to turn it over. He's not a huge size. He doesn't hit free throws. Makes it really hard to play people in fourth quarters if he can't hit free throws. My question to you out there is, has benching him increased his confidence and play? I don't think it has. I think it's gone the complete opposite way. So Gleason's kind of got a choice to make here. Like, do you sort of keep taking the hard line of he's not performing where we want, he's coming off the bench, and going with Majuk and playing Majuk between 8 and 12 minutes? I don't like the idea of starting guys and not playing them starters minutes. I don't understand the theory. Does Majuk give you something at the start of games that sort of balances your performance? If so, I don't see it. But I do see where coming off the bench has really impacted Hunt's confidence. And I still believe there's something in him that you can get a lot from him. He came into this game unengaged, committed a bad unsportsmanlike foul. I think illegal pick. They had just got an unsportsmanlike foul, hit two free throws. They had the possession. I think they were down 7. The game was right there where if you score there, get a bit of momentum, you play through Bryce Cotton, who knows? Instead, on the play, after the 2 made free throws by Nick Kay after the USF, Hunt commits an illegal pick. We go the other way. Sobey hits a 3. It's just snuff. Candles out. Game over. And I just felt like that was a result of not being engaged in the game and feeling like he's plugging holes. And yeah, as I said, they got a choice to make. Do they go sit him down and say, Dario, you're back in the starting lineup. You're our guy. We're going for it. Or do the Wildcats be ruthless? Do they get in a cat fight? If they could, this is my questions to all the Perth Wildcat fans out there. If they can find someone who suits their purpose a little better, could, would, and should they cut Dario Hunt? The Wildcats have been ruthless in the past with imports. They're out to win it. They're not there for a haircut. The question centers around Dario Hunt. I thought Mitch Norton was, when he attacks the basket, he's good, but boy, his shot was short on a couple of occasions as well. But it's about Hunt. What are they going to do? And who's going to close games out of Damien Martin and Mitch Norton? But that's really another question. I think it's Damien Martin. Last game of the round. This is a quick podcast. Adelaide hosted the Illawarra Hawks. Adelaide 102, Illawarra 96. Again, flattering scoreline because neither side were pretty keen on any defense. Here's my note I've got here. If this Adelaide 36ers team is a serious contender to Cairns for the fourth spot, I don't see it. We're in round 14 stroke 15 and they're still tinkering with their lineups. What is this team's best lineup? And while you're thinking about that, I want to bring up something. Buddy Nudge, friend of the show, came out on Twitter and was quite sort of concerned or critical about Ramon Moore. In this game, Ramon Moore had 10 minutes, 0 points, two turnovers and a few rebounds and things like that. But he just hasn't been himself this year. And, you know, he is an import in this league. And I said it earlier in Twitter as well, like they had the choice between cutting him and Taylor to bring in Randall. And I can see where a backcourt of Taylor and Randall would be a lot of fun and would be quite effective. Certainly more so than a Randall, Ramon Moore of late backcourt. You know, I think Taylor brings good defense and has been quite, now that he's settled in Sydney, he's playing quite well. Let's look at their lineup data. Their most played lineup is, unbelievably, Randall, Ramon Moore, Eric Griffin, Daniel Johnson, Anthony Drimmick, -7.7 net rating in 258 possessions. Not the most convincing of lineups. Their best lineup has not played that enough, over 100 possessions, and it's the starting lineup they have, which is Randall, Tease, Drimmick, Johnson, and Griffin. Oh, not quite their starting lineup, but you know their best five. So, but that hasn't been the team that's closed out a lot of games. Joey's getting very experimental with his lineup. At one point or another, he's just got to say, this is our starting lineup, this is our bench lineup, what are we doing? And really, they've got a similar question to Perth. Perth have the problem with Majuk, or not the problem, but the question with Majuk, and Adelaide have it with Obiche. He played 6 minutes in this game, couple of rebounds, didn't score, and didn't look like scoring, and had great energy and presence, but couldn't score. Is that what you want starting a game? I think he's better as just unleashing him through dotted through quarters and then frolling. Like where is, and Jack McVay, where does this team sit? They don't have the consistency of lineup that you want to see at this point. The consistency of lineup that Cairns have. The consistency of lineup that the New Zealand Breakers have, who while outside of the four are certainly building momentum. Interesting. That's it from the round's games. That's all I had. Let's look ahead to round 15 quickly. And we've got six games. Nice, easy, manageable amount of games. The last couple of rounds have been nutty. First game, Cairns are hosting the New Zealand Breakers. I'm picking Cairns in this one for the simple fact of I don't think Sec Henry's going to play. And without him, they're not as good. And Cairns are very good, especially at home. Second game of the round, Illawarra host Perth. I think Perth will make that long trip and beat them because they're a fast, superior, and talented team. Third game of the round, Sydney play Cairns. It's a bit of a tough one. I still am undecided as to whether the second of a back-to-back is an advantage or disadvantage. Do players build a rhythm or do they build up lactic acid and fatigue? I'm going to go ahead and say, regardless of whether it builds up a thing on a rhythm or not, Sydney will win this game at home. They're a good side. I think they should be able to play the defense this time to snuff out Cairns and hopefully one of them gets hot. Fourth game of the round is Adelaide hosting Melbourne. I think Melbourne are going to win this game. I think they took a big step forward against Illawarra, who were an easy beat, but they took care of it, and their shot chart looked better, their flow, their symmetry, their chemistry looked better, and I think for that reason they'll make that short trip to Adelaide and win. Fifth game of the round, New Zealand Breakers host Brisbane. Now, real tough one. I'm predicting the Breakers to have dropped a game earlier in the round, so do they then have the fortitude to bounce back? And I'm banking on Sec Henry being back. Is that foolish? Probably. But I think he's going to be back, and as a result, I think the Breakers are better than the Bullets, and I think they'll win this one. Last game of the round is Illawarra hosting Southeast Melbourne. Southeast Melbourne have had plenty of rest. I think that they're going to win this game, Southeast Melbourne in Adelaide, in Illawarra, pardon me. Let's have a look. That was all I really got from the rounds and rounds coming. A couple of talking points I want to put out to you, and by all means, get at me on Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod. I'd love to hear your thoughts on these things. The most improved candidate. I feel like that's the award that's got the most wiggle room at the minute. The MVP, I'm pretty certain, is either Cotton or maybe Lamar Patterson, and if he hadn't missed time, Scotty Hobson. I feel like, and Casper Ware, I feel like they're the main guys in the conversation. Don't think I'm forgetting anyone. No. But the MVP is a little bit more open. I know that might seem strange because people are probably shouting out Dane Pinot after the 20 rebounds, and he's certainly at the top of the pile, but let's have a look who the candidates are. It really comes down to two categories and what your definition of most improved is. And for me, there's really two schools of thought. The first thought is the players that made the jump from role player to a star player or a high-level player. In that category, there are two. And this, to me, I feel is more difficult and therefore more a mark of improvement to go from being a good player to a great player or a highly productive player. To be a bench player and then, you know, get a role because of, you know, injury and import failures, which is, you know, what happened to Pinot. Benson didn't work out. And with Deck, Aaron Brooks went down. And that's not a slight on either of them, but it is their circumstances. But that's one way to get the most improved. But to go from getting your minutes and just making your minutes count and be more efficient, that to me is real, a mark of real solid, incredible improvement. So for that reason, in that category, there's two. Anthony Drimmick is a bit of a dark horse, but he's on track to start every game, having missed about six or seven games last year. He's only playing in an extra 3.7 minutes this year. His field goal percentage has gone up from 42 to 49%. He's getting an extra 2.25 points, which is a decent upage in a 40 minute game. When you play 28 minutes, 3 points or 2.5 points, that's a lot. That's quite a lot. That's a basket or two. You know, that's the difference in a lot of these close games this year. So, 1.3 assists to 2.1. So we can almost call that doubling his assist tally, but still not setting the world on fire. And then steals, half a steal to one solid steal a game. Anthony Drimmick's jumped up from being a good defender to being a really like top line defender in the NBL, and it doesn't show up in the stats and it doesn't come up and you can't make it a tangible statistic or thought, but you know, he's just jumped up a whole new category and is one of the best wing defenders in the NBL. The other guy who really jumps out in this category and hasn't been mentioned is DJ Newball of the Cairns Taipans. He's only getting 1.5 extra minutes this season. In that, though, he's gone from 14.6 points per game to 19.4, top scorer on the Taipans. And, geez, 19.4 puts him at, what, third or fourth in scoring? I should have checked, but you know, Cotton's the top, or maybe it's Creek, Robertson. Anyway, he's around the top. He's gone from 41% from the field last season to nearly 50% at 49% from the field. From the outside, he's gone from 32% to 41%, so he's gone up by GST on his three-point shooting. And then at the foul line, his attempts are up, but also his percentages are up. He's gone from 61% to 84% free throw percentage. So my vote kind of goes to DJ Newball. He's gone from being like, yeah, good player, to like, is this guy MVP conversation? Probably not. But is he, you know, highly, high-level productive NBL second team? If he made the NBL second team, that wouldn't surprise me. Last year, he wasn't anywhere near that conversation. So, cap off to DJ Newball. And the other guys who are in this MIP conversation are what I call the Minutemen. Guys whose minutes have drastically improved, but their production has also improved. That's not easy. You know, you couldn't just give minutes to anyone and their production go up at the same rate. But these two have, and they are Sunday Deck, Dane Pinot. Deck's minutes from the Wildcats, 7 minutes, have gone up to 21 minutes, so three times the amount of minutes he was playing last season. His points have gone from 1.6 points per game to 8.6, so more than four times the amount of points. He's playing really well. And I only use points here, but he's basically gone up by a third, by three times or four times as many across all his stats, steals, rebounds, percentages are up. So he's one that's definitely made the jump. And then obviously Dane Pinot. What's amazing is he's gone from 6.5 minutes per game last season to 25 minutes per game. And all year last year, Andrew Bogut played these huge minutes from Andrew Bogut. You know, this guy could have backed him up and maybe he's put the step on and stepped up this year. But anyway, nearly four times as many minutes. His points per game have gone from 0.6. to 8.3, and his rebounds have gone from 1.7 to 8 rebounds per game. So he's getting four times as many minutes, but he's, you know, smashing it, getting eight times as many points and over four times as many rebounds as what he was with the minutes he had in Sydney. So incredible season. For me, it's Newell and Pinot. Let's see how they go the rest of the way. That'll determine who gets this award. But interesting little category, but I wanted to definitely make mention of those four guys. Give them a tap on the clap for a job well done. Last question for you guys out there, and this is one again for Twitter, at MBL Pocket Pod or at MBL Pocket Podcast at gmail.com if you've got a long-winded answer beyond 240 characters or whatever it is. Biggest off-season regret by a team. A player that was on a team last year and is no longer there but probably could have been. The big candidates, obviously, are Casper Ware is the big one, but Dane Pinot of Sydney, I spoke about it just before. Sunday Deck of Perth. Imagine if you had, if Norton and Martin aren't getting it done, you would have that ability to push in Sunday. Wouldn't that be interesting? The other one, of course, is Casper Ware for Melbourne. And then Craig Moller just quietly, but he's been injured, so I'm happy to strike him off this list. But again, a consideration. And then Adelaide. What's funny is Adelaide kind of parted company with three guys who have gone on to other teams. And done quite well. Nathan Sobey, we weren't so hot on earlier in the year, but has come on. And then obviously Sean Bruce and Taylor. And I'm going to kind of strike Sobey off this list because I think his leaving was either a mutual one or at his instigation. So it really comes down to Deshaun Taylor and Sean Bruce over Casper Ware. If we can strike off Casper Ware because obviously he is the biggest difference maker. But boy, wouldn't like Sydney love Dane Pinot backing up? Or and then I think Adelaide, like Sean Bruce or Taylor, would help that team a lot. In particular, Taylor. I think that's a regret for them this year, not having the courage to go with not courage, but not having the foresight to go with a two guard front. Interesting stuff, guys. That is all from the podcast this week. No guest, so it's just me. But a short one, 30 minutes, as you're doing the groceries or the washing up or the gardening or whatever you do. As I've said, subscribe to the program, why not? Every second week I like to get guests on here, and if you haven't listened to those evergreen episodes I've got up, the Matt Babcock episode about LaMelo Ball's draft stock, Matthew Attic Ponya, who creates the Foundation Club videos, my last episode with Body Knowledge, that's one you should definitely listen to. It's about around 13's games. But it also got storylines for the rest of the year. That's one that you might enjoy as well. And then going all the way back, Guy Neville's another episode. So, you know, subscribe, rate, review, all that nice stuff. Appreciate it, everyone. Have fun with the rounds games.